Well, we've been telling you that there's a brand new book out there. It's called Tfilas Hashlah. It is a parent's timeless prayer composed by Rabbi Yeshaya Halevi Horowitz of Prague with translation, commentary, and stories. And the person responsible for this book is author Rabbi Yisrael Besser, who's going to join us in just a moment. Again, go to artscroll.com. Artscroll.com, the brand new one, is called Tfilas Hashlah. Very timely for this week, which we'll explain. And when you use promo code radio, of course, free shipping and major discount. Always use promo code radio at artscroll.com. The brand new book is Tfilas Hashlah. Rabbi Yisrael Besser, welcome back to JM in the AM. Rabbi, are you there?
Hi, good morning.
There you are.
I'm here. Thank you so much.
A pleasure. A pleasure to welcome you back. There are many people who say Tfilas Hashlah, which we'll explain in a moment what it is, on a regular basis, but there are more than many that go out of their way, make a special effort to concentrate on it this week, specifically on Erev Rosh Chodesh Sivan. Why is it that, in fact, this time of year is the time designated for Tfilas Hashlah?
Right, so the Shlach HaKadosh himself writes in his Sefer, he talks a lot extensively about the mandate for parents to daven, to pray for their children, and the importance of it, and that all the efforts we put into our children and everything we do to teach them the proper way is nothing if you're not going to actually accompany it with tefillah. That's a big theme in his writings, which for the time in which he lived was a very serious amount of he left over a lot, and he writes straight, which is unusual for him. My heart tells me. The Kishlah Kaddish writes, you know, that my heart tells me that the most auspicious time for this tefillah that he's introducing to the people, this tefillah that he wrote for parents to say, is an Erev Rosh Chodesh Sivan, and all he writes is the month in which the Torah was given, and we were stamped as Hashem's children. That means in Chodesh Sivan, so to speak, is an anniversary party. So let's say, if, you know, a couple has an anniversary, and they want to institute certain things in their house. We want to make sure that no cell phones at the dinner table. Whatever people take on with their spouses to improve their marriages, you would think that an anniversary dinner is the time to say that, right?
Yeah, of course.
Walk at a restaurant and say, let's try to do it better. Remember, when we got married, we had so many ideas and so many dreams, and sometimes these things slip away with the distractions of life. Now it's our anniversary, let's try again. We'll go for a walk every day. Whatever that thing is going to be. I think what the Shlach HaKadosh is saying is that Chodesh Sivan, we reaffirm the bond that we made at Har Sinai with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And a big part of that bond is not just that we're going to try to live with the Torah, but we're going to try to raise our children that way and try to leave a legacy in the world that will continue right. That. So he says this month, Chodesh Sivan, is the anniversary month. We, so to speak, kick off the celebration.
Right.
By, he says, it's especially
appropriate. I mean, the truth is that you can make the argument probably for a few different days during the year, but certainly Erev Rosh Chodesh Sivan makes plenty of sense. And not that I would question his judgment on this, frankly. By the way, and I'm not asking this in a silly manner. I'm just curious. I mean, even if it's on Shabbos, right? Because this year Erev Rosh Chodesh Sivan is on Shabbos. Would one go ahead and say this Tfilas Hashlah on Shabbos?
Right. So it's funny. There's like the whole industry that, you know, runs around like when the silas got a little exciting. So that becomes, I know my, it's above my pay grade, the Paschal Halakha, but I saw all three opinions. Some people say this year, Shabbos is Erev Rosh Chodesh, but there's a problem because in Halakha you can't ask personal needs on Shabbos.
Right.
You know what I say? So some people say this is or isn't. Again, people say it every day. For sure, it's not a question. The ones who only say it, others say it with Yom Kippur Katan on tomorrow afternoon or tomorrow evening. When they say Yom Kippur Katan, they say it then, and others say it on Friday this year because it's closer to Rosh Chodesh. And it's not yet Shabbos, and it's not, you know, it's like everybody has to figure out.
So it's sort of like a Tfilas Hashlah Meshulash, Thursday, Friday, or Shabbos. Thursday, Friday, or Shabbos would all be acceptable this year.
That's great.
So there you have it. I liked how we're not Paschaling Shilohs, but boy, did we stumble upon a great psak. I can tell you that much.
That's a nice one.
Are you aware now? One of the reasons I know that people take it seriously in terms of saying it Erev Rosh Chodesh Sivan, honestly, is that you know, I see it through social media, just like we see with the Parshas Haman, you know, when it's the day to say Parshas Haman, the specific day that, you know, one should make an effort to say Parshas Haman. And I see that the Jewish world really does take this seriously and start spreading the word around that one should make sure to say it on Erev Rosh Chodesh. And again, this year, whatever day specifically they choose. What about people saying it every day? Do you come across those who include Tfilas Hashlah in their daily prayer or not?
I have, and it's interesting. You mentioned Parshas Haman. Like you said, there's a big segment of Klal Yisrael who says Parshas Haman on Yom Gimel on the third day of Parshas Peshalah.
Right.
There's a lot of people who say the Tfila authored by the Rebbe, you know, Rebbe Melech of Luzhensk on his Yahrzeit, on Chaf Aleph Adar.
Right.
Different people have different things that they say. I think that they all meet by Tfilas Hashlah. That means I have a lot of friends who do some, but not the others. I mean, everybody thinks Tfilas Hashlah is the only, I would say, modern-day Tfila that was said by the one who wrote the tefillah himself to be said on this day. None of the other ones, Parshas Haman is a school was said to be handed down from Viktad, the commander of Ivanova, but we don't have any documentation that he said it or didn't say it from himself. And, you know, he didn't write it anywhere. And not everybody says it because of that. Not everybody's connected to Hasidus. The Shlach predates, you know, that whole thing of Hasidus and the Vilna Gaon.
Right.
The Shlach HaKadosh predates that. It's one of, actually one of the four. There's four people. There's Mesira and Klal Yisrael. I don't know why. Who have the appendage of HaKadosh to their names. The Shlach HaKadosh is one of those, along with the Alshach. There's others. Chaim HaKadosh, that people say HaKadosh. You know, throughout the years, this was a Messiah that Malamdim schools were expected to respect, that you said the name, right. You know, when you said the Shlach, you said the Shlach HaKadosh.
He predates the era you're referring to by about 100 years, right?
Exactly. So, and he said, this is the day to say it. So,
right.
I don't think we have, and most people, you know, I would venture to say Tfilas Hashlah. Now, maybe, like you said, in more recent years, because of email that got
right.
spread,
right.
It's not very long, and there isn't a person on earth who woke in 5 minutes, 7 minutes to
correct.
Say tefillah to their children, and even those who don't yet have children, and there are many of those, who are either waiting for children or waiting to find their shidduch and build a family, the tefillah is very specific in that it's man asking to leave an imprint on the world, you know, for all that to happen to them,
right?
To that when they leave this world, there'll be something remaining from them.
Yeah.
So it's really all encompassing tefillah.
Yeah, no question about it. And look, it's no secret that when one understands the tefillah better, that's why certain tefillahs are very popular, frankly, when one understands easily what the tefillah is talking about and, you know, the words that we're using to beseech Hashem, it makes it even more meaningful. So people see what these words mean, how important they are, and they certainly want to, you know, be part of it, frankly. Now, I read the book. I don't want you to think I didn't. I read the book. But I still feel I need to turn to you to give everyone a taste of what this is all about. In other words, we know that, as you just indicated, when it comes to someone wanting to get married, someone wanting to build a family, have children, etc., obviously this is a key tefillah. But if you had to sum up the essence of this tefillah, what is it? What is the specialness of this tefillah that gives the avenue toward those goals such strength?
So I would say I would divide that answer into two, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
One is the overarching theme of the tefillah seems to be, remember why you're doing this in the first place. That's how the Shlach HaKadosh opens it, and he makes sure that you don't forget. I wrote there, I didn't want to be cynical and or, you know, belabor the point, but I'm sure you and I and anybody listening could think of people you know who had great intentions. They started ideas or endeavors or organizations because they wanted to help, right? So let's say somebody wants to start an organization to give out food to people for Shabbos who can't afford to make Shabbos on their own, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So he's very determined to help people. So he's motivated by this desire. Along the way, let's just say he needs to put up a building, and the neighbors are not happy because they think it's going to affect their view or the noise, whatever the reason, all right? So he goes to court with them. Now, I don't understand. You're trying to help people. You want to hurt people. What are you trying to do?
Nice.
She says, I want to help people, but on along the way to helping people, I need to just do this, right? You know, so that happens a lot of times in life. We start out with a mission to do something good, and in order to achieve that mission, sometimes we end up doing things that are counter to the original goal that we started to do, right? You know, so you're trying to do a chesed, you want to help somebody, so you want to pick up an older person to drive them home, but you're going to double park and somebody else can't get out of the spot.
Right.
So are you helping or are you hurting, right? Now, that's part of the human experience. I understand that life gets in the way. The Shlach HaKadosh thing is parenting is not like that. You better remember why you're in this game at all. So, you know, a lot of times a child will ask a parent, can I do this? Or my friends are going. Or, and the parents, they're busy. They're distracted. So they're not really listening. They say, yeah, just do it, because it's easier for them to say that. Okay, that sometimes happens. That's normal. But if you remember the reason why you got into this, you always have to think of the end game and say, will this get me closer to the goal or further from the goal? Mm-hmm. The Shlacha kind of starts out by saying why there's a world, why we're in the world, why we get married, and why we build families. So when you go in with that mindset, then your tefillos of what you really want become so much clearer. You know, right away he puts it, it's sombering almost, in a way that's not depressing. It's not a musar tefillah. It's not a musar work, the book. I try to keep it as inspiring and warm as possible. But there's nothing to talk about there. From the outset, the Shlach HaKadosh is setting the bar of why we, you know, to remember. The approach to davening for children is understanding what we're doing. What's the point?
It's a
That's the first thing that makes it feel unique.
It's a sobering experience. He really,
starts out that way.
He lays it out there, so to speak.
In a way, right, because how are you going to daven? Meaning you want different things based on what the goal is.
Right.
My goal is, you know, there are people who very much want that their children should marry into wealthy families because they want to have a nice chasana. That might be wonderful. That's great. A nice chasana is amazing, right? Is that the goal of having a child? Did you only have a child so that you could make them an impressive wedding? I don't think so. But you don't think about it always. Right. So the Shlach HaKadosh keeps you grounded, and then your davening is that much clearer. And then the second thing about the tefillah is that he covers everything. That means let's say parents. So somebody stopped me this week and said to me, it's funny, I was uncomfortable until I read your book. They said that his wife davens that she very much, it's very important for her that the kids are, that they're good-looking kids,
right,
aesthetically pleasing kids, that they're handsome kids, that they're attractive kids. Right. And she always felt that there's something wrong, like davening for that. You know, when she was expecting children, she would daven a lot. It meant a lot. Their looks mean a lot. She says, and I saw the Shlach HaKadosh says that they should be,
presentable.
That they should be tall, Nachum.
Right.
Nachum, like that one. But that they should be tall and people of stature and impressive. Right. That means it's okay to daven for that, because that's part of what a parent wants. So why shouldn't you articulate that?
Right.
You know, people are sometimes embarrassed to ask for certain things because I heard Rabbi Miller, maybe you'll appreciate this, Rabbi Victor Miller, off topic, saying on a tape, somebody says, should they daven for the Yankees to win or not?
Right.
The Yankees in the World Series, is it appropriate to daven?
Right.
So he says, he doesn't really answer the question in depth, but what he says is, do you believe that the control, the destiny of who's going to win the game, that there's only one force in the world that's going to decide that? And do you care enough that they should win, that not to daven for that is kfira?
Right.
Because then you're denying. So, like, he didn't tell the person you should daven.
Right.
But he did tell the person that if you're not davening for that, then there's something wrong in your belief system. If you don't believe that that the influence of who's going to win that game is in heaven. So the Shlach HaKadosh says that you should be davening for those things that are important to you, that they should have parnasa. Again, sometimes people think it's beneath them. Oh, the main thing is that they should be healthy. The Shlach HaKadosh says, yeah, health is important, but they also need to make a living. Because if a person's healthy, but they don't have two nickels to rub together to make Shabbos, then what's the point?
Right.
Life doesn't have a lot of flavor.
Right. You want them to have a good, fulfilling life, and obviously you'll need some.
It's just like Shlach HaKadosh is saying.
Right. You'll need some material aspects in order to make that happen, which obviously makes sense. My favorite part. I mean, I often in my conversations with you about specific prayers or specific, traditional things that we say, I've indicated to you a line or two. I remember we did this with the Yeshus Chayil, a line or two that really, you know, stands out to me. And I don't know if this is so, you know, usually it's a dramatic one. Usually it's, you know, one that, you know, sends a shiver through you when you say it. In this case, I didn't pick that one. Instead, I picked this one. When he says, V'yihiyu bale Torah, mari mikra, mari mishnah, mari talmud, mari raza, mari mitzvah, mari gomli chasadim, mari midos trumios. So many times, not a criticism, because obviously it's important, but many times we'll, especially those who are Torah giants, will emphasize Talmud Torah, being a Torah Jew, etc. Now, obviously, all those things are important. But the fact that on the same line, he's talking about being a Gomel Chesed, someone who does charitable things. He talks about being a, you know, someone with Midos Trumios, masters of sterling characters, the translation says. We don't often always talk about children's character when we talk about what we wished for them and how we want them to be viewed by others. So I think that line sort of encompasses everything that a parent wants, in addition to the things that you just mentioned.
Right. One would even say that it's a byproduct, an outgrowth. That means
it's
inevitable that if somebody is really engaged in Torah the way they should be, and if, you know, me and you have a shared, I wouldn't say Rebbe, he wasn't my Rebbe, I wish he was, but we shared love for David Feinstein.
Right.
David Feinstein always said that if you close your Gemara and you're not a little bit nicer than when you sat down, then you didn't learn correctly. Because Torah, the Taruch HaNayim, is supposed to make you a sweeter, more pleasant person. And if it didn't have that effect on you, then you didn't learn correctly. So I think that what the Shulchan Aruch is saying is that the being Baalei Midas Trumias, being of sterling character, is a byproduct of Torah learned correctly.
Did you now, sometimes I read too much. Was it in your book that I saw the story with Moshe Feinstein helping the young kid with the homework?
Was it? In this book, Little Maid of Lamed.
It's in this book, right?
It's in this book. Yeah, isn't that amazing that when I asked Hashem Lamed, I didn't make terms on that contract. I said, let me teach Torah. So here's a child who wants to learn. Who am I to say? Not that. I didn't mean that.
Yeah, well, look, I can't get into this now, obviously, but it does take a level of humility that not all of us have in order to do that. So it's all the midos sort of coming together. Like you just said, Rav David Feinstein said, if you're shutting the Gemara or shutting your sefer and you haven't gained in other areas of proper behavior, then you haven't fulfilled it hasn't been the most fulfilling session. Let's put it that way. And obviously that's really important to remember. Rabbi Yisrael Besser is with us. He's author of Tfilas Hashla, Parents' Timeless Prayer. Now, those of you who want it, obviously, you can have it for this Thursday, Friday, or Shabbos. Shabbos being Erev Rosh Chodesh Sivan, as we explained. But also, as Rabbi Besser mentioned to us, there are people who say this on a regular basis, whether it's Erev Shabbos, whether it's every day of the year. There are people who say Tfilas Hashla literally on a daily basis. So it is always timely in terms of exploring what Tfilas Hashla is, what its translation is all about, and some of the stories you tell are great. Can you pick one for us? I don't even know. Sometimes you're on to your next or after that, the even next project. So I don't even know if you remember some of the stories from the book. Is there one that stands out that you want to share with us from Tfilas Hashla?
I would choose a story that meant something to me because it's on the words you just said, Amare Midas Trumias. So the question we asked there, and there isn't a lot, not a lot of Sfarim out there in Tfilas Hashla, even in Lashon Kodesh in Hebrew. There wasn't a lot. So most of the Sefer is built on conversations with people or asking people these questions, smarter people than me, wiser people, and trying to understand them. And the question here is, what does it mean to be Mare Gemla Chassadim, to be a master of Gemla Chassadim? A master of Torah, I understand. That means
right.
I can learn Torah, I can know Torah.
Right.
And I could be a master. That means a master of Torah is somebody who's capable. Like, let's say, Rav David Feinstein, you can ask him anywhere.
Right.
He knows it all. He's a master.
Right.
So I get it. Right, like there's a chess master, there's something much more exalted, a Torah master. What does it mean to be a master of good character and good deeds, of midos? Either you have midos or you don't have midos. What's a master? So I once heard this from a Jew in Israel many years ago, and it moved me so deeply. He worked in in Mata stuff in Yerushalayim. There's a nursing home, an old age home called Neve Simcha.
Right.
He said there was a particularly grouchy older person over there. It's hard to judge people at that stage.
Right.
Lonely, out of the hell, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, by lunch one day, he was particularly animated. He was like in a good mood. He was jolly. He was joking with everybody, which was very unusual for this resident. So this individual asked other employees, what's going on with him? Why is he in such a good mood? They said, you'll never believe who came to visit him. Go ask him. So he went over. He said, why, what's going on? He looks so, he says, Reb Shlomo Zalman. The God of Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach came to visit me. We were neighbors in Shaarei Chesed for many years, and he heard I'm here. So he came to visit me.
Right.
He says, wow, what a covet. You must be. And the guy felt great. And then the resident himself tells a story, and the nursing staff supplemented the details to the story, which is, Reb Shlomo Zalman came in, this person was sleeping. Reb Shlomo Zalman told his grandson, who was accompanying him, wake him up. So he looked at his grandfather in horror. What does that mean to wake? You can't wake up another Jew. I should push him and jostle. He's an old person. He needs to sleep. You don't just wake him up. It's not a yeshiva dormitory. What does that mean, wake him up? So he says, no, wake him up. So he says, he couldn't do it. So Rosh Hashanah almost said, okay, if you don't wake him up, I'm going to wake him up. So he was confused. He says, Zaydee, he's sleeping. He said, he's not sleeping because he's tired. He's sleeping because he's bored, because he has nothing else to do. He would much rather be up and have visitors. So they woke him up, and they sat with him for a long time, and he was delighted, and he was happy, and he appreciated the visit. Before they left, this person, this resident, tells Rosh Hashanah Zalman, I want to tell you the truth. People sometimes come to visit me. If they're in the neighborhood or they feel compelled or family members, often if I'm sleeping, what do? They leave a note. They say, we stopped in, say hello.
Right.
Sorry that we didn't get to see you. Be well. He says, you just compounded my pain by double. One, I lost an opportunity to break the boredom, to break the monotony of my life by talking. And two is, I have to know that I missed it. Because what else should I do besides sleep? So you killed me double. One, I still have nothing. And two is, I feel rotten. because I missed it. He says, Rav Shlomo Zalman is Azai Gut. He says, Rav Shlomo Zalman is the first one who understood that to tell me you came, that takes care of yourself. So the answer is many of us, I'm sure that we've all at times gone to visit people, you know. Now, probably we felt, at least myself, I shouldn't say we, me, maybe felt a little bit of relief that the person was sleeping. Look, I you know, check. I did what I had to do. I'm a nice guy. I showed up. I was here. I did, you know, I did the right thing. He's sleeping, so I don't have to sit here. So win-win. I came. He knows I came. He knows I care about him. I got the mitzvah, and he's sleeping. So I don't have to, you know, I don't have to sit here more than necessary. That's not nice. That's a balmidus, but it's not a mari midus. It's not a master of midus. A master of midus anticipates the outgrowth of the good act he's trying to do. That's a master. That's Rosh Hashanah. That's the that ability to see what am I setting out to do, and what is the best way, the most optimal way to achieve that goal of doing chesed. That's mari.
Phenomenal.
That story moves me a lot.
Phenomenal. I'll tell you, it reminds me of those who have difficulty judging how long they should stay in someone's hospital room. And sometimes the Murrays are aware that, you know, 5 minutes is enough. And that, you know, if you stay, if you stay 15, it's not, it's only, you know, 10 more minutes on your own cheshbon, but it's a tircha for the person who's lying there. Very interesting. Wow. I love that.
I have to tell you, we're off topic, but if you give me 10 seconds, sure. I heard this from Rav David Soloveitchik when I learned it. The Gemara learns out midos. There's no pasuk in the Torah that says to have proper midos.
Right.
The Gemara learns it out from different words. So one of the psukim is, I think it's Vayidatim, it's Aderech Yalchubay, that we should teach them the way. Hashem tells Moshe, you should teach them the way that they should follow, the Jewish people. So the Gemara learns out. Vahidatem zu gmilas chasadim. Esaderech zu tztaka or kvura. Esaderech zu vikachelim. From each word, the Gemara extrapolates, learns out another interpersonal behavior, which is admirable. So David said, why do we learn out the word vikachelim from the word yalchu? Esaderech yalchu, the way that they should go. Why is that the source of vikachelim? So Rav David said to his grandfather, from Chaim Briska,
I know where you're going.
You're a Briska, Nachum. This is your turf. Rav Chaim said, because Yalchum without gain, without coming and gain, because Chaim means go and get out of there.
Yeah.
Don't linger.
You got to know when to leave. Got to know when to leave.
Exactly. So exactly what you're saying now.
I love it. Before I ask you what you're working on now or working on next, I need to tell you the following. Rabbi Yisrael Besser is with us. I need to tell you the following. When I revealed a few days ago that you're going to be joining us on the air, multiple people asked me the following. Can you ask Rabbi Besser about the chesed that people in his community saw during the Pesach Montreal episode? Can you brief us on what happened up there and what you did see at that time?
Sure. I wrote an article about a mishpacha, which I tried my best to convey. I'll send you the link later. It's called The War Missed Pesach. You could Google it. It's a hard thing to find words for. The Montreal sometimes have power outages. It's not unusual. It's an older grid. It's an older city. It's an urban area. And it's usually restored within 2 to 3 hours. It's not a big deal. We deal with it. A couple of times a year it happens. And it's on, there's a very, very sophisticated app, Hydro-Quebec, the electric company. You could check in, you put in your address, it tells you when it's coming back, and it's usually within 10 minutes, or even earlier.
Interesting.
Not every day. At Pesach, there was this weird kind of weather conditions here. Never seen anything like it before or after, in which, you know, we checked later, had it been half a degree colder, it would have come down as hail, which would have not done any damage. You know, it's not comfortable. Half a degree warmer, it would have been rain. And same, it wouldn't have done damage. It was exactly at that freak, nobody anticipated it, that where the water came down from the sky as a sheet of ice that coated everything with ice but stayed there.
Wow.
It was too cold to just go down. So the trees, you know, like old baseball cards, people put in those perspective protective cases, those flip covers, you know?
Sure.
That's what every tree looked like. It was gorgeous. But eerie, the wires in the trees had a sheet of like a protective case over each branch.
And a lot of weight on it, very heavy.
It wasn't going down. Yeah. So for a minute it looked beautiful and people taking pictures, and all of a sudden you start to see branches like, and then boom, it was the eeriest, you know, I live on a lot of trees on the block, big old Canadian maples, and you start to hear a boom and suddenly you see the hood of a car get smashed in. Boom, and people, it was very scary, big branches, 15, 20 feet, and then trees themselves. So what happened is when the tree started to topple, it sliced wires in two.
Right.
Not one wire. Tens of wires across the city were just on, you know, live wires. So, you know, it's like 2 o'clock in the Erev Pesach. And no, everyone realizes right away it's not going on anytime soon, because we're talking about a city where there's no wires. The whole infrastructure is down, you know. So as we went into Pesach, there wasn't not much you could do, and not a lot of news available in Santa. So the first Seder, we did our best. It was, you know, there's no heating in anybody's houses. It was pretty cold. It was, you know, at night below zero, still up by Pesach. A lot of us had, as I did, my, you know, had my grandchildren here, had my married children here. So, with, you know, with babies, it was strange. For the woman who spent a lot of time preparing their menus, there wasn't any way to heat up food.
Oh.
So, you know, different people used tea lights in the oven. Some had sternos. There were people who have gas ovens still, so, you know, some of the houses. So anybody who did, you talk about the chesed, that was understood that anybody who had a gas oven, a stovetop, their house was wide open. That means 24 other people were coming in, sometimes to heat up water just to make a coffee or tea for somebody in the family, or warm up a baby bottle. And other times, people didn't really have hot food because there were such lineups at every house that people just brought their food to the point that it was edible, and then they went home to serve it. And, you know, the first day of Pesach went that way. The second day, we were sure, you know, by then it was going to go on. And then when it came into Shabbos, it was a three-day Yontif. So a lot of people did get back. Power before Shabbos. I didn't. Power went on for about half an hour, and the transformer blew. The overload, the surge was too much for the old wires.
Oh.
And like a fire broke out on our wiring, so that was disappointing. And like I said, people just opened their homes and opened their hearts. Anybody who, you know, the people who are away for Pesach, it's in every community, there are many who go away. By the Matzei Shabbos, everybody said that, you know, their houses were wide open. Anybody who was gone and did have power, because the blocks were split,
right
away made their houses available to those who didn't. People bent over backwards, as Jews do in trying times, to share whatever meager things they had. Everybody who had, people who don't normally miss on Pesach, that means they don't eat food, not right. prepared in their own homes.
Right.
The Rabbanim were encouraging them to do so, because right. people needed to eat, and they needed to eat hot food. The Rabbanim really were heroes. The Shilas that they were paskening, you know, on the second day of Yom Tov, there were already quite a number of older people who the Rabbanim instructed to go into cars
right.
and to go into homes where there was power.
Right.
And this went on for me until Sunday night of Chalmaid, others even longer. Other shorter.
So the coldest.
I would never wish it on anybody.
So the coldest Pesach
behind us.
The coldest Pesach ends up being the warmest Pesach.
It was that's what I was going to say. That, you know, we looked back at it. We talked about it after. I talked to my kids about it after. Again, we wouldn't wish it on anybody, and it's not something that you ever want to happen to you or anybody you love. But once it happened, it was very beautiful. That means to be forced to dig deep into yourself and find a way to keep your spirits up and find a way to connect to what we're trying to do on Pesach under those circumstances was something.
And just to overcome that initial horror, knowing that you're about to enter a three-day Yontif without electricity, that's, you know.
The only way to do it was an hour at a time. We kept saying that. You can't think long term. You have to just go, maybe it'll go on an hour. Let's go. What are we doing now? What can we do to keep the kids warm now, to make the situation, the atmosphere in the house a little lighter, a little happier now? Can't see how God does that at the Seder, by the second Seder already is, you know, that whatever lights we had, tea lights or flashlights, were out. It was eerie. The streets were empty of people. Couldn't really, there's no, you know, even cars couldn't go on any of the streets because there were still wires all over. And the hydro workers in the city was working overtime. They did a great job.
And on top of that, we should give an honorable mention to those communities from outside Montreal who helped out, even some on Yontif.
Oh, absolutely.
Which was also, when I heard that part of it, I'm like, wow, you know, this was a, you know, talk about being a small world, that people from different communities very far away, so to speak, from where you are, took it upon themselves to, you know, help out in any way they could, which is pretty remarkable. And to those Rabbanim also. And I'm sure their local Rabbanim, I'm sure, had many shilas to answer and you know, and made sure to do whatever they could to, within the realm of halacha, to make everybody up there as comfortable as possible.
I have a non-Jewish neighbor, wonderful person, and he was talking to me. So he said, he was telling me that one of the municipal buildings, like ice skating rink, not far from here, there was some kind of generator. So the city of Montreal had made it available to people who just needed to get in and warm up and charge their phones maybe, you know, so you can come in there and use the plugs or just to stand there if people were near freezing. And he said to me, but you guys, you know, he didn't say it in a way that was disparaging.
Right.
Or jealous, and he said it with admiration. You guys have, like, this whole family, even the people you don't know, who are just taking care of you. You guys have Jews in New York, you maybe had read this in the media or somewhere, who just, you guys, like, you just have each other's backs. Like, you have your own government, he said. So, of course, you know, of course, we shared whatever we had with him, and we made sure that he didn't, you know, there was no reason for him to feel anger about this. But the point he was making was very true, because it was the sense that somebody's worried about you, and that you know, the people who need a generator is your head. Be it Hatzalah, Hazerim, these people working around the clock. I mean, again, the elderly or people with younger babies. And a lot of food went bad. A lot of people worked hard and freezers were going bad. So Matziantif generators helped for that as well. Once it wasn't any more life and death questions, just a question of property. So, you know, Matziantif, a lot of the people were able to salvage their foods. So it was a very nice thing to be part of Am Yisrael.
I imagine that. How much meat is in everybody's freezer Erev Pesach? Oh my gosh, I didn't even think of that. Right. And the timeline makes this even more dramatic, because I didn't realize that this was early afternoon on Wednesday, Erev Pesach. I mean, just right. For the word to start getting around to other communities in Canada and the United States takes time, and they were still able to respond and help out during the first days of Yontif, which is pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
Well, Rabbi Besser, you always seem to be involved in some drama. I hope things are peaceful and calm for Shavuos, I hope.
I appreciate that. That's very nice.
The book is called Tfilas Hashlah, and as many of you know, people go out of their way to say it this coming Shabbos, Erev Rosh Chodesh, Sivan, maybe some on Friday because it's the day before Rosh Chodesh Sivan and it's not Shabbos, maybe on Thursday for Yom Kippur Katan Muktam, which is happening starting tonight and tomorrow. But whatever you say it, and there are many, of course, who say it every single day, Tfilas Hashlah is even more meaningful if you read the brand new book about it by Rabbi Yisrael Besser. Go to artscroll.com. Make sure to use promo code radio for your free shipping and your major discount. Working on anything special these days?
I had done a Haggadah this year for Pesach, right, which was something new for me. I'm usually not translating other people's work. So there are others who do that much better than me. Really, it's a skill to maintain and take the words of another person in another language and keep their flavor. And people who do that amazing. I did do it this year for the first time with the Haggadah of the Melech Bedamin. Because I felt a connection to it. It was something I wanted to try. And the response was very nice. You know, people felt that, you talk about Montreal, that Haggadah carried a lot of people here because his message is one of very, very, very much about joy and simcha and accepting that whatever is happening in your life at that second is tailor-made for you for a reason. So the Haggadah had a nice response. So we're working now on sort of a Beli Melech Bedamin around the year. Just his insights, nice, and his reflections, and he's carrying you through from Pesach Sheni to Lag BaOmer, into Erev Chodesh Sivan, into Shavuos. I mean, there's always something in the Jewish calendar, right, that's coming next. You're never more than a week or two away from a date that means something. Why does that date mean something? What's the significance? What's the meaning? What's the depth? And he has this ability. You know, the Ben Shalom gave him this the language of this generation is something he's able to articulate in a short amount of words. He's able to say it in a powerful way. So I'm working on that now. I'm loving it.
The Haggadah is the best-selling volume in Art Scroll history, or am I confusing that with something else?
I can't tell you the numbers for sure, but I do believe it was...
Number one, right?
It was Baruch Hashem.
Pretty amazing.
That's you know, my mother's up to date on that, probably. Number one. But it sold very nicely, Baruch Hashem.
she's the one who gets all the social media posts about that, huh?
She tells me, I heard that someone told her at work that it's even better. You know,
I love it.
She goes into the bookstore and she checks.
Look, she's hands-on. She has to make sure all these compliments she's giving you are accurate. What do you want me to tell you? Mazal tov on the book. Congratulations. Another great one, Rabbi Besser. Always enjoy having you on, and thanks for joining us this morning.
It's such a pleasure, Nachum. I love it. Have a great day, and a good chodesh.
You as well. Guten chodesh. Enjoy Shavuos, and continue to enjoy the projects you work on. Tfilas Hashlah, everybody, a parent's timeless prayer. Many of us, of course, very, very focused on it this week, as we explained. The composer, Rabbi Yeshaya Halevi Horowitz of Prague. We didn't even go into the Shlah outside of the fact that he has the moniker HaKadosh, but you could read all about it and read all about him and the translation, commentary, and stories as laid out by Rabbi Yisrael Besser in the brand new book. Go to artscroll.com. Make sure to use promo code radio for Tfilas Hashlah and for all your selections. Artscroll.com. Use promo code radio for your free shipping and major discount. More coming up. It's Wednesday at JM in the AM.